Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Star Guys, a podcast about Stargirl on the CW. I'm a star guy, as it turns out. I'm Alex.
Whoa, we got two star guys here because I'm one of those. I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
That's a third star guy, rare triple star guy in the house.
Wow.
And we're going to be talking about Stargirl Summer School Chapter 4, the fourth episode of Season 2. So if you haven't watched it, go away. Go watch it. Have a good time. Have a little laugh.
Enjoy.
Learn some things about yourself.
Go have a laugh.
Have a laugh.
Go have a laugh.
But to give you a broad overview of the plot, just in case it's a little foggy for you, Tigress and Sportsmaster break out of prison to go see their daughter Artemis try out for sports college.
As you should do.
Yeah.
You know, as
sports
good
college.
Parents, you got to do that.
So she, in order to do that, they grab Mikey, they go over to Pat and Barbara's house, have some hangout time, ultimately see the tryout, which gets messed up by Cindy Berman and the Black Diamond.
Classic
Eclipso behavior, messing around with a school football game, just like he used to do in the comic books.
Oh. Yeah. That's how you get the people.
At the end, Artemis doesn't get into sports college. She, in fact, gets recruited by Cindy for the young ISA that she's slowly building up. She also recruited the young fiddler this episode, Isaac, I believe is his name.
Isaac, yep.
Isaac. And on the other end of the spectrum, we've got the JSA. There's not quite as much focus on them this episode, but Courtney does go after the Shade, is trying to find out information about Eclipso, as she finds out that they have some sort of tie back in the day. She also finds out that things are not exactly what they seem, that the Shade is being honest with her, and Pat is maybe lying to her. So while we're dealing with light and darkness, we're also dealing with shades of gray.
Yes. And that's the thing about gray is, you know, I don't know if you know this, it's actually right in between black and white.
Okay.
Have you ever been a painter of any sort?
Yes.
You know that's how you get grays. You mix black.
I have read 50 Shades of Gray, so I'm pretty familiar with the different colors. It's just a list of the colors in that book.
Oh, really? Could you quickly list as many shades of gray as you possibly can?
Absolutely.
I could probably do 50, no problem.
50 mid?
Yeah, I mean, if you read the book, you should be able to name some.
It was so long ago, though. It was so long ago. There's Christian Gray. That's one of the colors. I remember that.
Christian Gray? Well, I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah. Anastasia Steel Gray.
Oh, wow.
Steel Gray? Okay. Her name, Steel Gray.
Her name, the actual names of the characters of the book are Christian Gray and Anastasia Steel. It's pretty dumb.
But people take this book remotely seriously?
I have no idea. I read it because the movie was coming out. When the movie was coming out, we were covering it pretty heavily at work. And I was like, well, I'll find out what this is all about. And it is the stupidest thing in the entire
world.
It's not sexy.
You read the whole thing, right? Because you hated the whole thing. So you just kept reading because it was so bad.
Yeah. And I ended up basically shirtless by the end because I was so hot in my apartment because it was the middle of the summer.
Right.
Yes. No doubt.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I guess sidewalk gray,
sky gray,
cloud
gray,
skin gray, shoe gray,
vampire gray.
Wow.
Green gray, red gray,
blue gray,
blue gray.
Yeah, this is fun. This is
good. This is
Pete's attitude is gray.
Let's jump into the episode, though, because I thought this was a fun one. I was so excited to see Tigress and Sportsmaster back. They were a real highlight of the first season. And as they sort of jokingly set up towards the beginning of the episode, when Sportsmaster shows up, basically none of the ISA is alive, just the gambler. And he's like, yeah, I don't care about him. That guy sucks.
Yeah, they down on the gambler. And he was just like, he's awful, though. He was the worst.
But I do think that shows smarts behind the scene to be like, yes, these were the breakout villains. They're alive. Let's definitely bring them back. They're fun to have in the show.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was fun to see interact with Pat and Barb. And there was that one moment where he's like, why weren't we friends? He was like, because you tried to kill me. You know, it was, right. It was fun back and forth.
Well, their energy is very fun. Like, they seem like they could fly off the handle at any moment. But at the same time, they're sort of like, you know, they just want to talk a little bit. Mm-hmm. They don't seem to understand what a vase is. There's a bunch of shots when they're in the Pat's house, Pat and Amy Smart's house, where they're like looking at stuff like, well, imagine this. You put a flower in here and add water, and then it lives. It was very funny background work.
Yeah. Definitely was.
That was very good. A lot of the shots, this episode was again directed by Leah Thompson. I guess they're probably block shooting stuff because of COVID. But she added a lot of very fun bits, I think, whether maybe they were in the script, I don't know. But things like the reveal of Sportsmaster behind a picture of his own, of himself in the newspaper as Mikey's reading it. That's a very fun shot. The vase thing you're talking about. There were a lot of fun asides as well. My favorite line of the episode is when Pat takes Tigress and Sportsmaster to the tryouts. And there's like this very light in the background, Tigress saying, your wife is lovely, by the way. And he's like, I know that. The way Luke Wilson delivered that line was great. It made me laugh a lot.
That whole scene was funny too, because they arrived there and everyone's like, hey, Pat, my man Pat's here, like walking through town. They don't take a second to look at the criminals.
Exactly. They're cheering. They all know because of, all the
trials. He's a local trainer.
Yeah, plus exactly.
I love the callback to him training Pat, being like, hey, you've sort of given up on the working out, huh? Was a fun moment.
Well, let me ask you seriously about this, because this is something that I wrestled with is probably too strong a word, but while I was watching the episode, exactly what you're talking about, Justin, that like they break out of prison, they go to Pat and Barb's house. Everybody seems very chill about everything the entire time. That they go to these tryouts and they're sitting right in the stands. They even get a chance
yelling, drawing attention to themselves.
Yes, cheering. They say goodbye to their daughter at the end. Nobody cares, even though there was an altercation there. Does that negatively impact the episode at all for you?
Because of the unbelievability that they wouldn't be
instantly arrested.
Yes, or does
it not matter with Stargirl?
I mean, the way this show plays, I think if I worked on this show and a reporter like Alexander Zalbin was like, why did you make that choice to have it go this way? I would say the way that Blue Valley works, we lean on a lot of the Midwestern qualities that you might have in the real world, heightened to the point where the people in this town are very friendly and they let people sort of go about their own business. So the people aren't going to call and have this couple arrested until something bad happens. And when nothing does, it feels like they made the right choice.
Pete, so you feel the same way?
Rationalization.
Well, I mean, there has been a history of turning your head the other way. I mean, they ran through the middle of town in the last episode. Like, things blew up, crazy lights, nobody looks. Yeah, she flies in and out of her window all the time on a magical staff. No, nobody bats a lash.
We saw her fly by in the night sky in this episode, and I was like, wow, that's very clearly someone flying. For anyone on the ground to look up and see.
Yeah, you got to kind of have a little bit of it disbelief. And I feel like it's fine. It goes with the territory.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. I mean, there's a goofy, childlike quality to a lot of the stuff that happens in Stargirl. It's not deathly serious like a lot of the other Arrowverse shows. So to that end, when things like this happen, when I was watching the episode, this was, like I said, it's something that I was thinking about while I was watching it. Does this strain the believability of the show? And ultimately, if it's fun, it doesn't matter. It's the same thing as the Thunderbolt last episode, where people are going to see a pink genie running around town. What did anybody think about all those stop signs dropping down anywhere?
They're gonna be like, hey, isn't that Jim Gaffigan?
Yeah. He's doing the Hot Pockets bit.
Yeah. Turn into that genie. Cat.
What?
There's a cat on Twitter that looks just like Jim Gaffigan that's going around.
It's a very specific reference you're making.
Well, it's very hot right now. I'm surprised you're not. You're on Twitter, so I don't know how you
missed
you're
talking about on cat Twitter. Because for those of you listening, Pete is a famed cat daddy. And so he's on cat daddy Twitter, yes. Oh, Jim Gaffigan is a cat. Yeah. Hot trend.
It's hot right now. That shit is everywhere. I don't know how you missed that.
By the way, check out Pete at cat daddy on Twitter.
Yeah.
The account. What do you have, like 2 followers, something like that? So if you could follow him, that would be great. It's a good account.
It's really great. We're a lot of smart content. And the picture is you in a full-on cat suit, sort of like a sexually suggestive cat suit.
Nope.
Like some sort of sexual cat?
You've spent some time as a human sexual cat, right? Like a human who addresses a cat for sexual reasons.
Don't do that to me again on another podcast, please. I can't take it.
A human sexual cat. I'm not saying. I just want you to be upfront about this, the things you're into in your life.
Don't do this to me again, man. Please.
Just check out Cat Daddy on Twitter. You'll see the photos.
Oh man.
Cat Daddy. I'm gonna go there to try to register in for Pete, and it's gonna be some sort of Nazi account or something.
Exactly like that. Right. That's true. We're pushing people into the unknown. Just Google Pete LePage human sexual cat. There's nothing weird will come up.
That'll cover.
Yeah. Oh man.
So this storyline, ultimately, like, I think what it does really well beyond Tigress and Sportsmaster being a lot of fun is it also drills down on Artemis as a character, somebody we haven't spent a lot of time with. And you get, I felt, a lot of sympathy for her over the course of the episode.
Yeah, especially, I mean, she's sort of done. It's a tough episode on her. Like, she's struggling with her parents being away. This prison guard who, like, is busting her balls in the opening scene, I was like, this guy's going to get murdered. And I can't believe he didn't.
Yeah. I was surprised they didn't loop back to that. That felt like a very clear. Maybe it'll come later on in the season. This show certainly takes its time with teasing things out as it goes. But yeah, that seemed like a very clear beginning of the episode. He's a jerk. She gets superpowers, comes back, kicks his butt. But that gets into the other thing that was kind of weird and surprising about Artemis in this episode that I do think strained my credulity a little bit just because this is a superhero world. She clearly already has super strength and nobody comments on it at any point, which is weird.
It is weird that she gets away with that as on the football field, throwing an absolute rocket in the middle of the episode.
Well, I had a bigger problem with the apple moment. The fact that she crushes an apple in her bare hand, one hand, mind you.
And we could do that. Anybody. Yeah. That's a
hashtag apple challenge. Everybody go and do that one.
Oh, good. Smart.
Yeah. Check out the one on Cat Daddy. It's a cat doing it. It's super cute. It's
amazing.
Yeah. And a little sexual as well. So Courtney, though, and Yolanda seeing it, particularly Courtney, who has been so suspicious of everybody across the board, her first reaction to nearly anybody is like, you're a good guy, you're a bad guy. Like, she sorts them into those two places. The fact that Artemis crushes an apple right in front of her, and she's like, whew, she crushed an apple. Well, moving on with the rest of her day is a weird reaction from Courtney, I think.
Yeah, unless Courtney already knew that about her.
Yeah, I think she knew it was a rotten apple, and it was like it was very easy, smushable. So she was like, I almost did that accidentally. So,
yeah, see, we've all crushed
it. She didn't say anything because she was like, phew, I'm glad she didn't take a bite out of it because then I would have looked back because it was so rotten.
So she purposely handed her a rotten apple and then was relieved when she crushed it rather than ate it?
Yep.
There's always a bad apple in the bunch.
I've never heard that before. That's really good.
Apple picking trick.
Yeah, it's an apple picking trick. But I really thought that it was nice of her to be like, hey, if you need some energy, I have an extra apple right here.
Right. Because that was a lot of underpinning this episode was a lot of like diet discussion.
Yeah, really? It was a lot of like.
This is like a documentary for the Tom Brady diet, essentially, this episode. Mm-hmm. A lot of talk of whey, protein powder. A
lot of protein, yeah.
While not I'm eating junk really food. Going in on this episode, just like ripping it to shreds.
No, you are truly the Eclipso. I'm picking it apart.
There's been an interesting theme, I think, in this show about adoption and foster homes, which is kind of interesting and weird. What do you take away from that? I mean, there's certainly a lot of discussion about how you should be portraying adoption and foster homes. And I understand you have sort of like that mythic fairy tale quality. So you have mean lady who runs the foster home, but I worry that it becomes a pattern at a certain point.
Yeah, that scene was sort of a tough one. It felt very like written as a caricature for both, for especially the mom, the foster mom. And I get like you want to have this foster mom be not good because Artemis is in a bad situation and she misses her parents. And that enhances that part of the story. But this woman was just an absolute cartoon of a bad foster parent, like on the phone, doesn't listen to the kid, doesn't care, just is doing it for the money. Like she says like multiple times, I need more kids so I can make more money or something like that, which is just like, that's a low blow, I think.
Yeah. And there was,
there's one last thing. There would have been plenty of ways to make her not nice to Artemis that weren't wildly stereotypical and easy.
Absolutely. The other thing, maybe the reason it stuck out to me in particular, is because Supergirl, airing the same night, also has a mean foster care lady. So it was this weird double block of 8 o'clock, we got a mean foster care lady, 9 o'clock, mean foster care lady, on these two superhero shows. And to the point that you're saying, I think there's other ways that you can do that. And particularly because there are so many issues that people have with the portrayal of the foster care system. There are so many people that have had really positive experiences in real life. Making it harder through media like that is tough. So
I think what you forgot, though, is at 10 o'clock, it was the nanny, you know, so it was like,
positive. And in the nanny, remind me of the plot. Fran Drescher kills the two parents and takes the kids and raises them nicely.
Raises them well.
Wow. Yeah, it's like a reverse Batman situation.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm just trying to parse whether that makes sense or not, but let's move on.
It doesn't really, but I'll give it to myself.
Okay. Nice. It's nice.
Yeah, I mean, and again, to following on the Artemis track, like the way that she is taken advantage of by Eclipso, tricked, ruins her chance to get out and sort of have that better life that her and her parents are pushing for. And then she's eventually tempted back by Cindy, sort of juiced by Eclipso. Just not a good story. And I will say, on the, we were talking about believability. The one way this series goes hard is with the cruelty of the villains. And like they'll sort of be like, oh, no one will notice the parents. But the cruelty of the villains, both and violence, both all through season one and season two so far, is so different than other shows.
Yeah.
Well, Cindy is great. She is a great villain. She's really good. There's, you know, she's clearly being used by Eclipso, but I think versus the other stuff that is very big and bold, they relatively underplay the fact, or at least maybe Meg DeLacy, who plays Cindy, is underplaying the fact a little bit of she's lonely, you know, and she just wants friends. Yeah. Like that is her main thing that she is looking for. So, yeah, it's a good motivation. She's clearly, like, cackling it up and eating up the scenery while she's doing it. But the fact that she is just trying to be like, hey, Isaac, come here. Hey, Artemis, come here. Be my friends. Hang out with me. And the only way I know of being friends with people is by ruining their lives so that they will be with me. And then we are all supervillains.
Yeah.
Is interesting. Like, it's interesting and fun to watch. Speaking of supervillains, let's move on and talk about the Shade and what's going on with him.
You want to talk about a classic move. Like, where would I run into a supervillain named the Shade? Oh, maybe the creepiest bookstore you've ever seen in your life.
Well, the bookstore was the House of Secrets, which is a place directly out of the DC universe. Do you think, Justin, I'll ask you, you, I think, are probably a little more of an expert on this side of the DC universe. Do you think this is the actual House of Secrets, or was that just a fun Easter egg?
Do you think it was shot in the actual House of Secrets?
The real one, yeah.
The one that exists sort of in the liminal space between worlds. Hard to shoot there, hard to permit there. I've tried to shoot a bunch of stuff there in my... the rest
mayor's
of my
office
life.
Real tricky about shooting there.
Real tricky about shooting because it's hard to transport people cross dimension.
Especially equipment.
Oh, equipment, exactly. Messes up the batteries.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I feel like it was more of a reference. I will say the bookstore clerk was sort of felt like he might almost be the Sandman universe character. What is it? Kane, who's in the House mm-hmm. of Secrets.
There was definitely that shot at the beginning there. I probably could have looked for it, but that shot of him looking through the magnifying glass.
Yeah.
That feels like a shot directly out of Sandman or something. I honestly don't remember.
I agree with you. You should have looked for that. Yeah.
Thank you. I mean, the other Easter egg, just while we're jumping around, and I do want to come back to what happened with the Shade and Courtney, but they give a rundown of where Eclipso and the Black Diamond come from when they very smartly just do research at the library, which I thought was great. I really like that move. I love it when the heroes are like, calm down. We got this. We're not going to run into it anymore. We learned from our mistakes over the past couple of episodes, and we're going to take a chill. But they find out that Eclipso came from Diablo Island. Yeah. That and Bruce Gordon discovered Diablo Island, and in the comics was the original holder of the Black Diamond and the original person possessed by Eclipso. So I think we're going to be looping back to that at some point. The other thing that I'll mention, I don't know if this is a spoiler, but it certainly seemed like it based on this episode. But when I interviewed Meg DeLacy for work, mentioned that Cindy has been spending the time between seasons on Diablo Island, finding out about Eclipso and finding out, she also mentioned, about the ISA. So it feels like there's some sort of secret history thing going on there. And certainly there's that very palpable moment where they say, yeah, the island disappeared. We don't know what happened to it. So yeah, that seems like something they'll loop back to later.
Had to go hump another island, so it probably disappeared for a little while.
Yeah. Human sexual island. The that whole thing, like, you know how hard it must be to get an island off a map? Mm-hmm. You got to go through, scribble it out, erase it, draw a little, like,
it was easier back in the day because there were just a couple of maps, so you just have to erase a couple of them, but now you'd have to go around the country and erase every book.
It'd be awesome to be the map guy back then. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone would be dropping by. Fun, just fun. Like, people would look, hey, the map guy, let's buy the map guy a drink. He tells us where we're going.
Yeah. He'd be like, hey, how long until the bus gets here, map guy? Can you tell me? And he'd be like, I don't know, five minutes.
The bus guy.
I'll tell you where the bus stop is. Yeah, there's always two guys in the villages, map guy and bus guy. Mm-hmm. I looked it up, and it's actually Cain and Abel was the House of Secrets. Cain was in the House of Mystery.
Oh,
that would be a big move to bring in that stuff, particularly given there's a Sandman series going to be on Netflix. So I feel like it was not explicitly him, but it was just a fun Easter egg. Yes. My take.
I agree with you.
But back to the Shade and Courtney.
Back to the Shade.
Yeah. What did you think about the scene? What did you think about the development of the Shade as a character here in this episode?
Well, he seemed less evil. He seemed more just like giving Courtney super important information that she needed. And then was kind of like, Courtney, why don't you relax? I'll do your job for you. You know what I mean? Like, I'll take care of this. And part of me thinks just listen to the Shade and back off a little bit.
Do you think he's telling the truth, though, Pete?
He seemed really into it. You know, it seemed like that was, like, really important to him, and he was going to take care of it.
There are a couple things. Pat, early on in the episode, says that Shade is the devil in the shadows, or is that Eclipso he was describing?
Eclipso is the devil in the shadows.
Eclipso is the devil in the shadows. So I think
the Shade he refers to is the shadow and the devils.
Nice. Good. Not confusing. Mm-hmm. But I think the Shade is probably not telling the whole truth. Here's a prediction I have. I think that Eclipso tempted Shade, and Shade killed Dr. Midnight's daughter.
Whoa.
Oh, wait, no, we saw that death.
Yeah.
So it was Eclipso.
Yes.
So that's not a good theory.
There's something back in the day. Like, the Shade has been around for a very long time, and I agree with you that I think he's hiding some information there. He doesn't want to just take the Black Diamond and throw it away forever, whether it's unlocking some part of his powers, or we get that big tease at the end of the episode that Beth hasn't been talking to AI Charles McKnighter, but in fact Charles McKnighter seemingly is still alive in some sort of shadow dimension. So maybe he's trying to get back there. You know,
I think that McKnight is going to be the one that can save Best Parent's marriage, because like she's having a hard time, and putt-putts are magical places, but I don't know, man. You know what I mean?
You what think if a good game
the
is
only
bring
way
that
he's
dimension?
Able to escape the shadow dimension is by marrying her mom.
Whoa.
Oh, wow.
That old trope.
Wait, so they'll push for the she'll push through the divorce so she can be have Charles McKnight as her stepfather.
As her dad.
That's another theory. I mean, honestly, the theory I just said that was completely wrong, that one's almost as bad. but yeah, I love that last little bit. Very cool last shot of the episode. Really, really nice. But I do think, so back on the shade, I think there is something, there's a confrontation coming between Pat and Courtney about the shade. Like, Pat seems to be over saying, like, again, the black and white way that he looks at the world. And I think Courtney, who also has that worldview, is going to need to change her worldview over the course of this season to realize that some bad people have good in them and some good people have bad in them.
And I think that was kind of like the whole thing with Mr. Tyler there, where, you know, the teacher realized, like, hey, you got another perfect score, and then was like, I'm sorry for judging you. And he was like, it's cool, everybody does, which was heartbreaking in such a small kind of moment, but very powerful.
So that teacher, who seemed relatively nice in this episode, we were suspicious of her in the last episode because she was super weird and super mean and all the other teachers are very bad. As mentioned, nicer to Rick in this episode and apologizes even, but also has 1 million clocks on her desk, I think. What's going on with her? Is she the stuff that I wrote down that I don't think fits at all, but she could be, there's a DC Comics villain called Clock King, which obviously she's not a king. She could be Clock Queen, perhaps, or it's a gender neutral name either way. Yeah, and that's fine. Or maybe in some way she ties into, and this is my big theory going forward, Perdegatod, who's a time traveler. I don't know if Perdegatod is hiding out as a nasty history teacher or something. Is she a history teacher? Is that what's going on?
I don't remember what it was for Rick, but that if it's a true villain hiding out and like busting Rick's balls about getting a perfect score, feels like that villain's given up on the plan.
It
whatever
seems
the
like
overarching plan was, it's like, I'm just going to commit to teaching these kids right.
And maybe I misinterpreted. It seems like from the just the shot of all the clocks, it seems like each kid she's killed, she's kept a clock. And so that's what I got from that.
Oh,
shot.
Is that what it seems like?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. That is what it seems like. I think she killed Charles McKnight's daughter.
I do think there's something more going on with her. Maybe she's not a big villain. Maybe it's more of a Shining Knight type thing last season where the janitor turned out to be a hero. But that they've been spending too much
time.
Yeah.
She's like to be on time.
I don't know. You don't put something like that in that is super weird and then not follow up on it in some way, you know? No?
I guess we'll see. Okay. What about the fact that Yolanda seems to have a job at Pops from Riverdale?
Right.
She's terrible at it.
Yeah. And comically terrible, which, you know, I guess is better. But, man, it was a little like it was a weird moment where they're like, everybody's in agreement. She is a terrible waitress.
Do you feel like, I mean, I picked up on this. This was not a hard plot line to follow. But do you feel like there needed to be one scene setting this up rather than just cutting to her being a waitress at the restaurant? Like some mention of, oh, hey, I was thinking of getting an after school job. Or, oh, I got a job at the diner to make a little more money or something like that. Versus her just being there. It feels like something got cut out somewhere along the line.
Yeah, I could see a scene where she tells Courtney, like, hey, I got a job. And Courtney's like, but our crime fighting, what do you? And she's like, you don't pay. JSA don't pay.
That's true.
Wow, we should hold up sides. We should protest outside of Pat's shop.
Yeah, unionize the JSA.
Absolutely.
And I'm surprised that Jade hasn't been back around while we're talking about the JSA.
She's definitely going to show up again later in the season. I don't remember which episode, but yeah, my guess is she is off on a journey learning how to use her powers now that she has these new powers, and she's going to come back after that. No, like, we're not going to see her training montage. We're going to see her be like, yep, I'm all powered up and I'm ready to go.
She's going to come and save the day at a very particular moment.
Probably. Any other notes about this episode that you guys wanted to call out in particular?
One note, Diablo Island, all that stuff, Bruce Gordon, that's the scientist in the comics who Eclipso possesses.
I think I said that already.
Did you say that?
I think so.
Was that when I was looking up something else?
Yes.
Could have been.
That's another
do we talk about the Fiddler moment?
Maybe Charles McKnighter's daughter killed him.
Oh, boy.
Killed him.
That's my theory.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about the Fiddler moment where it's like, you're going to learn how to play the violin. I think that's how every kid learns, and it's kind of sad.
It's called the Suzuki method.
Mm.
That's a joke for Suzuki? My brother, maybe. Suzuki? Yeah.
What are you? Sudoku? I think you were saying Sudoku.
I'll tell you what. We are on it today.
Yeah.
We're pristine. This is why people turn into this podcast, is for all the correct takes.
Well, let's do something that we can definitely... Well, we're so good we say the facts twice. Let's talk about something I know we're experts on, Mikey.
Yeah!
We got a real Mikey watch for this episode.
Ooh, yeah.
How did you feel about the shot of Mikey in full-on in the ISA that Eclipso presents to Cindy?
Yeah, that was heartbreaking. But what was real nice was when Mikey called and left the voicemail, Pat got in the car and we got like a burning rubber shot, which was really, it was nice to see. That was cool.
Yeah, Pat really gave up on the element of surprise when he was entering the shop to see who had captured Mikey.
Yeah.
Mikey also giving off big young Dave Coulier energy here in this episode. Mm,
cut it out.
Yeah.
Let's move on then and talk about the star of the episode. Who was the star of the episode, Pete?
I mean, this is pretty obvious, guys. You know, you got to go with Mikey on this.
What?
You know, it's a setup of...
Just because we just, could be, just
yeah,
started
that was the
talking.
Last thing could that happened, so you remember it best.
The villain moving forward, the big villain, and, you know, I'm a little worried about it. I'm a little worried about Mikey and Pat's relationship. But, yeah, I would say Mikey or Barb. It's really close. Either way, you know.
Nice. Do you think that Mikey will end up riding with the ISA for some amount of time? Or is that
I'm
a
worried
red
about
herring?
It. I'm worried about it.
I still don't know what he would do, like what his powers are. Is he going to drive the truck?
He's a great driver.
I am terror. I am the night. I am the bad driver.
Not terrifying. What's your star of the episode, Justin?
My star of the episode, I got to give it up for Shade. I really like the way that this is coming together, finding that middle ground where he's a villain who maybe has to make up for his evil ways, his regrets. And I like the idea that he becomes sort of the mentor on the other side of Pat. He is the shadow that Pat casts.
Whoa.
So that Courtney can have two mentors going forward.
I'm going to give it up for Sportsmaster. I think it's very close between Sportsmaster and Tigress because they're both fun. I really like the conversation that Tigress and Barbara had in the kitchen. That was very enjoyable. But Sportsmaster kind of just has the ends. The actor is very funny, and he is eating it up in every scene. I enjoy watching him. What, Pete, what's your question?
I just wanted to say I'm glad that this episode is the last time we will see Beth, like, so lonely, put on those goggles and be like, Chuck. So I'm so glad we're moving past that because that was fucking killing me. She's watching her parents' marriage fall apart and the one person she needs is not there in those goggles and it's too much. So I'm glad we're graduating from that and we're going to get to the bottom of the Chuck
The moment
thing.
In the next episode when he gets on the goggles and talks to Beth, he's like, don't worry, I'm coming to marry your mom. It's going to be amazing.
It's going to be amazing. You're right.
I bet you that we will see that scene multiple times going forward. Her being like, hello? Because those glasses, it's not like he's there all the time. He cut out in the middle of the end shot.
Absolutely.
I can't tell you. It's too heartbreaking.
If you'd like to support our podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast on YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about Stargirl. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at StarGuysPod, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, Starguys out.
Star Guys out! We'll finally bring the killer of Charles McKnighter's daughter to justice!